Welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Welcome, everybody, to the award-winning Political Cesspool radio program. It's Saturday evening, September 11th, as we come to you tonight from AM 1380 WLRM Studios in Memphis, Tennessee, our flagship station, going out also to the AM-FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network and simulcasting online at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Big show tonight. A couple of marquee guests, Paul Fromm, the renowned Canadian free speech activist, the attorney from Canada, is running for mayor of his town up there north of the border. Paul will be joining us during the third hour, along with a very special surprise guest. But between now and then, we've got a lot to talk to you about this evening, and helping me do just that this first hour is none other than Keith Alexander.
Great to be here, as usual, James. It's summertime and the living is easy here in Memphis. I guess this is probably our last weekend before we move into fall, isn't
officially.
It? Yeah, officially. But, you know, it's always good in Memphis in the summer, and it's also
I don't know about that.
Also good here. Well, you know, the thing that's good about Memphis in the summer is that you can just sit back and relax. We, unlike a lot of people, we've got it all figured out. And when you've got it figured out, then nothing surprises you, and you can, and you're well prepared for everything that comes down the pike, right, James?
That's exactly right, Keith. And we, of course, tried to help make our listening audience more prepared for that which is coming down the pike. And to get things kicked off tonight, I want to read to everyone, share with everyone, a letter that I got in the mail just yesterday, holding it in my hand as Keith is my witness. And this really just goes to show you the kind of listening audience that we pull here in the cesspool, and I couldn't be more proud of it. The letter comes from a listener in Arkansas, and it reads, "Mr. Edwards, please allow me to donate $100 to your fine show. I'm looking forward to the new book. I've read the covers off mine. I listen to your show all the time. It's like a well-trained deer dog, hot on the trail and nipping at his heels. But Beck, Hannity, and O'Reilly, they're just running rabbits. Stay on the right trail." Now, Keith, if that isn't indicative of the great Southern listenership we've got here, and of course, this is a worldwide radio program. We got listeners all over the world. We're based here in the South, and I tell you what, I can really relate to a letter like that. That sounds like it was written by somebody in my family.
Well, as we often say on the show, when you hit the nail on the head, you drive it straight. And that's what our listeners do. We hope that we're putting everybody on the right track. That's what our intention is, and when people wake up and realize what's going on and what the what the end game is for all this, what our elite have in mind for us, you know, if that doesn't shake people out of their lethargy and get them into right wing advocacy, I don't know what will, James.
Well, Keith, with that being said, let's move on now to our first topic of the night. And by the way, I want to thank that listener. I'm sure he's listening tonight. Thank you so much for that letter and the support that you and everyone out there shows this radio program. We couldn't do it without you, and we're very blessed to have you. Keith, tonight is September 11th, and I think everyone knows what's so significant about that date, including one pastor down in Florida, a holy roller down there in Gainesville. He has a congregation of about 50 members who meet in a tin can, it looked like. And he wanted to burn some copies of the Quran. I don't know if anyone's heard about this story. It's only been the biggest news story in the world for the past 2 weeks. And to me, you know, it's not a big deal at all if he does it or if he doesn't do it. The reaction that it's elicited from the global news media, the Pope, Hillary Clinton, General Petraeus, and everyone in between has just been way, way outlandish. And there's a few reasons for that. Of course, it's perfectly fine for the Bible to be burned, for the American flag to be burned. Of course, if you're not burning a Confederate flag, you're a racist. We'll talk more about that in the second hour. But the fact that this little guy, Terry Jones, wanted to burn some Koran, that doesn't make me upset one way or the other. He should do it if he wants to do it. I think he probably just did it to as a stunt. There's no way, though, he could have imagined that it would have become this big of a story. He probably is somewhat of a charlatan. But nevertheless, Keith, what is it about this story that everyone's missing except for us?
Well, we're of two minds. We are genuinely of two minds on this story because, as usual, the mainstream press and the mainstream conservatives, people like Beck, Hannity, Limbaugh, etc., ad nauseum, Michael Savage, always jump on these things because it's taking our eyes off the ball. They raise this and try to whip up this fervor against Muslims so that we won't focus on our true enemies, which is Jewish power and influence. You know, they would all like us, you know, don't pay any attention to that little man behind the screen. You know, let's the enemy's out here somewhere else. Don't look back there. That's part of it. And of course, Terry Jones is falling for it hook, line, and sinker, you know, probably like Sean Hannity and Michael Savage would like him to.
And I would like to add this, though, and I know, Keith, you agree. You know, the Muslims are definitely not our friends. They have never been the friends of Western civilization. They have never been the friends of Christendom. They are certainly not the threat to us that the Zionists are. That's just not debatable, in my opinion. But it should be known that, they're not a friend of ours throughout history. They're not a friend of ours today. And I don't buy into the argument that the enemy of my enemy is my friend in this case. But at the same time, it is true that they're not the threat that these others are. And that's something that everyone seems to be missing. But Keith, what do you make about the reaction that this has elicited? I think it certainly goes to show the insecurities that the Muslims have with their faith. It wouldn't bother me if people burned a Bible or a Confederate flag. That's not going to whip me into a frenzy. I would think it's pathetic and sad. But, it wouldn't get me to do all this. But the fact that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and all of these people are reacting to what a pastor of a congregation of 50 members is doing, it shows, I think, the weakness and the insecurity of American foreign policy itself.
What it really does, James, it shows that we are the only group, white Christian Gentiles, of course, you know, that's kind of redundant, but white Gentiles are supposed to be passive. We're supposed to sit by idly and serenely while they burn our Bibles, burn our American flags, kill our troops, behead kinsmen that are overseas. But on the other hand, if you dare to think about burning a Quran or some other religion's holy book, then you committed the most heinous crime and sin in the world.
In America, no less. He's talking about burning it on American soil.
But, you know, that's part of it, and Terry Jones is probably reacting at least in part to that situation, and in that respect, I sympathize with him. Why is America, that's supposed to be the most powerful military country in the world, why are we so easily cowed? Why are we always biting our tongues when other groups aren't? But on the other hand, you know, it's not the Muslims that are making us remove the nativity scenes from the courthouse square in our towns. It's the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union. The American Civil Liberties Union is not 50% Muslim. It's over 50% Jewish, James.
Keith, when you hit the nail on the head, you drive it straight, as you already said. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick commercial break here on the Political Cesspool. Just getting started tonight. Got a dynamite show, great guests forthcoming, and great topics to be discussed. We're going to pick up on this story and more right after these words from our sponsors. Stay tuned. James Edwards and Keith Alexander back in a flash.
We'll be back right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please don't understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back, everybody, to the political cesspool. Keith Alexander and I yucking it up here in the studio during that commercial break. We got to do political cesspool TV, Keith. Have a live video feed coming out of this studio during our break so everybody can see how foul-mouthed we really are. I can't say it on the radio, though, that's for sure. We were talking about that first segment, opening segment tonight, but even less politically correct on the show we are. In private, yes. Opening segment talking about the pastor down there burning the Koran. He didn't go through with it, of course. Probably got spooked by the G-men, but nevertheless. And we're not going to spend much more time on this because everybody in the world is talking about it. And between all of them, you've probably found an opinion that you agree with. But I do want to share with you what I wrote on the blog very quickly. Basically, the Obama administration was claiming that it's unconstitutional to burn the Koran. That was their official. Well, that's what they said. But here's the thing. So yeah, it's okay to burn the Bible, but unconstitutional to burn the Koran. So they're saying basically that this pastor, whether or not it's distasteful or not, you can decide. Burning the Koran, by exercising his freedom of speech to do that, he's threatening the lives of U.S. troops. They went on to say that as well. Now, that's weird to me because the Hollywood, New York, Washington, D.C. axis of evil, they keep telling us that we're blowing up all of these countries to spread freedom and democratic principles like free speech. Now they're telling us that we have to stifle our own free speech here in America for the sake of the troops over there blowing everything up. Now, in other words, the military isn't really making the world safe for democracy, and we should restrict our freedoms of speech here in America to make war zones safe for the troops. Now, of course, it goes without saying, the troops are only doing that which they're told. The troops are honorable. They're following their missions. They're doing their orders as they should. But we're also being told that it's outrageous to suggest that Muslim anger at our foreign policy and constant meddling in their region of the world has anything to do at all with the 9/11 attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. But now the same people that are telling us that it's too dangerous for a tiny little holy roller church in Florida to express their opinion on Islam because the Muslims won't like it is absurd. Now, of course, let me say this in closing, that I have to ask myself the question, if this preacher down in Florida were to drop his plans to burn the Koran, which he did, and instead take a photograph of a crucifix and a jar of urine, would the federal government then give him $15,000? And I answered my own question by saying it's doubtful. People paying, paying people to take pictures of Jesus Christ submerged in urine is what Republican administrations do. And you'll remember that the Endowment for the Arts under a previous Republican administration did pay $15,000 for that work of art, and of course that's taxpayer-related money. But Keith, a final word on the would-be Koran burning.
Well, see, the elites that run this country are now showing their true colors. They don't want us doing anything over here that is possibly going to endanger the mission of our military that they have secretly designated to be the police force for one world government. Most Americans wish that our troops would get out of all these foreign lands, come over here, we'd save all that money, we'd save all the blood and treasure of America, and we could be totally self-sustaining. Of course, that's the last thing that our elite want. In fact, they're deindustrializing America. They're destroying the middle class by doing away with all the manufacturing jobs. And they certainly don't want some little guy like Terry Jones coming in here and throwing a monkey wrench in the gears by stirring up Muslims in other parts of the world. This is, you know, it's so absurd, James, that it's gone from the sublime to the ridiculous.
And in the meantime, Keith, while everyone else in the American government and global media are worried about what a pastor of a flock of 50 sheep are going to be doing, Glenn Beck, Sarah Palin, and the rest of the Tea Partiers, they've been too busy to worry about this because they're preoccupied with their own groveling towards wannabe black conservatives. They never learn. No matter how much the Tea Party members grovel or praise Martin Luther King's holy name or swear on a stack of daily workers that they're not racists, the NAACP and the liberal media refuse to believe them. The NAACP, which, you know, ironically enough, is an organization whose sole purpose is to supposedly advance the cause of only the black people, announced that they're going to be monitoring Tea Party rallies for racism. This is hot off the press, ladies and gentlemen, a proclamation from the NAACP that originated just last week. They're going to be monitoring Tea Parties for racism. Now, we used to call that stuff free speech, But, you know, of course, if Joe McCarthy pointed out that there were communists working in the White House, he's on a witch hunt, must be stopped before he destroys free speech. But if NAACP and the liberal media track the signs and T-shirts on ordinary citizens that they wear to political meetings, they're great Americans defending the Constitution and the American way of life. And here's the story. I'm going to read this quickly and turn it over to Keith for commentary. The NAACP, the story reads, has a message for the members of the Tea Party movement. We're watching you. And, of course, you know I'm reading from a liberal daily newspaper when I utter the following words. They refer to the NAACP as a civil rights group. Of course, every black in America is either a civil rights activist or a reverend. But nevertheless, the story says the civil rights group NAACP has partnered with three media websites to form a Tea Party tracker intent on monitoring racism and other forms of extremism within the Tea Party movement. The online project, which was developed and branded by the NAACP's new media staff, has drawn criticism from some Tea Party supporters who have repeatedly cried that racism plays no role in their movement. Hillary Shelton, director of the NAACP's Washington Bureau, said the project was started because NAACP leaders kept hearing from its members that they were seeing racist signs and T-shirts coming from the Tea Party movement. I mean, are these people even serious? I mean, all the people at the Tea Party do is grovel and get on their knees and proclaim that they're not racist. They elevate any black person that shows up to wanders into the camp up to the podium. But anyway, This tracking site is set up, the story concludes, to be utilized as a tool to track activities as they come up, Shelton said. Of course, this is the director of the NAACP's Washington Bureau, and she goes on to say, it is in some ways consistent with the kind of tracking that has been done of other extremist entities. I don't want to suggest that the Tea Party is a hate group, but there are some disturbing elements within it. Goes right back, Keith, to the synopsis of my book, the tenets of my book. If white people can't get it through their thick, dumb skulls that these people, you know, in fact, I was told this on CNN in one of my interviews on CNN. I have it actually posted to the website tonight. Every white person is born racist. That's what they said on CNN. That's what they told me. If the Tea Parties can't understand that no matter how much they grovel, no matter how much they acquiesce and capitulate, they're still going to be called racist by these people, I can't help them. And as long as they continue to betray our convictions and values in order to try to absolve themselves of this proclaimed racism, then they're never going to go anywhere. Keith, we got a minute to break.
Thanks for all the time, James. Well, what this shows is, again, what we were talking about before, that's a heads I win, tails you lose proposition. American Christians can never speak out for their interests. They can never go on the offensive against another religion that gives offense to them, like the Muslims, by burning a Koran. But, of course, Muslims can burn American flags and Bibles to their heart's content. Likewise, white Americans can never consolidate and lobby for their own racial interests with the government. But, of course, the NAACP was created exactly for that purpose. And because of that, you know, it's you know, two different rule books. It's heads I win, tails you lose. Whites always lose in the elite's estimation.
We're going to let Keith Alexander continue on that line of thinking right after these words.
Peggy Sue. Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta
get out of this place. Tell you what, we're locked and loaded tonight, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, we just start the show. We don't even give you any time to buckle up. We just accelerate, you know, pedal to the metal right out of the gates each and every Saturday night here on the Political Cesspool, brought to you by the Liberty News Radio Network. James Edwards, Keith Alexander here with you this evening, live, of course, as always, September 11th, 2010. Opened up the show tonight talking about the great Koran burning that never occurred down in Gainesville, Florida. Good southern country down there. People don't realize that the political cesspool receives more donations from Florida than any other state, with Tennessee being a close second. We get a lot from Oklahoma. Got supporters all over. Red State America, that's right. But when you think of Florida, you think of Miami, I think, is one of the images that probably comes to your mind first. But anything really north of Orlando is still very, very southern, traditional, conservative stomping grounds. And really love Florida. So anyway, the burning didn't go on down there. But we were talking about that. We were talking about how the NAACP now, Keith, has opened up a task force, a tracking brigade to track and monitor racism and extremist elements within the Tea Party movement. And what's so bizarre about that is that they announced that they were forming this tracking operation right after the Glenn Beck rally, which was nothing more than a black suck-up session. So anyway, your thoughts on that, Keith? I know you're making some good points before we ran smack dab into the commercial break.
Here's what it's all about, James. White people throughout the world are expected to be punching bags and pincushions for every other group in the world. They can never go on the offensive themselves. They can never have a sense of racial solidarity among themselves. They can never lobby the government for their own interests. And, you know, we're called white supremacists and we're called white nationalists and all these crazy names by groups like the SPLC and the ADL. And liberals generally, but basically all we're trying to do is get equality for white people. We want white people to have the same right to lobby on their own behalf. We want them to have the same sense of racial consciousness that other people do. And we want Christians to be able to stand up for their religion in the way that Muslims apparently feel free to stand up for their religion. If anyone gives offense to a Muslim, then somebody's, there's going to be some trouble. It's like that song, somebody's going to hurt somebody. You know, it's the Eagles or whatnot? Or
Heartache Tonight by the Eagles. We should have put that up on our entry on the blog last week where we did all the doo-wop singing.
But anyway, you know, they're going to burn some books. They're going to burn some books. They're going to, burn somebody in effigy. They're going to burn an American flag. They're going to take some type of saying. They don't take anything lying down. But then on the other hand, when a white Christian like Terry Jones shows the least propensity to show any type of gumption and to stand up for himself and for his faith and for his people, well, of course, then he has gone far beyond the pale, because we are stepping outside of our assigned role as punching bag and pincushion. See, the NAACP, again, they are ignoring the fact that the Tea Party Brigade, particularly their leaders, people like, Sarah Palin and Glenn Beck, are doing nothing except trying to, kiss up to blacks. They see in there the possibility and the potential for an organization that can focus white racial solidarity, so they're coming after them, accusing them of racism, saying they're going to monitor them. What if they did the same? You know, J. Edgar Hoover did this with the NAACP, with a lot of the civil rights movement luminaries like Martin Luther King, first and foremost, and boy, did they come up with a mother load of depravity and immorality in that movement. They're not going to find it among any white group like that. And it's, let's just turn things around again. We want the same rights. That's what we're here for at the political cesspool. The NAACP is asking the Tea Parties to expel all the racists from their group. What if they expelled all the racists out of the NAACP? If they did, they could hold their national convention in a telephone booth.
That's something you said, Keith. I meant to bring that up, or meant to have you bring it up. You said, what if the NAACP formed a task force? Yeah, a task force to monitor all the racists in the NAACP. They'd be looking at every member.
Yeah, exactly. That's what they're that's what the NAACP was formed to do. That's what it's done from the moment of its inception, and that's what it continues to do today. On the other hand, it's totally improper and taboo for whites to do the same thing. William Raspberry, the noted national columnist who has a syndicated column that runs in newspapers all throughout the country, said, under no circumstances is it ever permissible for white people to have a sense of racial solidarity and to lobby on their own behalf to the government or anywhere else. In other words, again, like we said, heads I win, tails you lose. It's only going to be for others because they want to bring the white power structure, as they see it, down. Of course, there is no white power structure. There is no WASP of hegemony in America. It hasn't been since the 1960s. And, you know, one of the things, this leads right into our next topic, James, because what is happening, okay, I'm trying to get me to swallow the microphone here. I'm going to have to get it a little bit nearer, but anyway, one of the things we like to do on this show is explore racial differences. And all of this is kind of gravitating around one of the biggest racial differences, and that's the difference in racial consciousness between the races. Blacks have probably the most exaggerated sense of racial consciousness of any race, and therefore they approach politics totally differently than we do. Here's a little bit of an article from Ameren called Black Racial Consciousness Part 1 that's exactly on point, and I'm going to read a little bit of it to you to give you a taste of it. It says, blacks do not have the same politics as whites. The Bay Area Center for Voting Research surveyed voting patterns for 237 American cities and found that race is a proxy for the city's politics. Black voters are liberal and white voters are conservative. As the center's director explained, Detroit and Provo epitomize America's political, economic, and racial polarization. As the most conservative city in America, Provo is overwhelmingly white and solidly middle class. This is in stark contrast to Detroit, which is impoverished, black, and the most liberal. What do blacks think about race? How do they experience race? How are they expected to think about and experience race? The contrast with whites in this respect could not be greater. For whites, race is not a permissible criterion either for personal decisions or public policy. Whites have no legitimate aspirations as a group and do not usually think of themselves as a group unless they are called upon to apologize for past and present imagined sins. For most blacks, on the other hand, race is the central and most important part of their identity. Their view of politics, history, government, or culture is intimately bound up in a racial consciousness that sets them apart from all other groups. They take it for granted, for example, that the job of a black leader is to work for the benefit of blacks without much regard to others. Okay, now let's go. They have, in other words, a deeply rooted racial consciousness that can even express itself as alienation from the United States of America itself. For many whites, who have for the past 50 years generally tried very hard to banish race from their decision-making, the depth and power of black racial consciousness is difficult even to imagine, and when they encounter it in its full force, they find it deeply disturbing. As, for example, in Obama's election, in which 97% of the black population of America that voted for the black candidate Obama. See, that's why it's so silly for people like Sarah Palin and Glenn Beck to seek after the elusive, extinct black conservative. It's like the ivory-billed woodpecker that they thought they had sighted in the swamps of Arkansas last year that supposedly has been extinct for over 100 years. Well, you know, they could mount a similar search for the black conservative. They're not there, okay? Now, here, let's get back to this thing. He said it's, as we'll see, racial loyalty is so essential for blacks that they despise blacks who do not practice it sufficiently, who are not black enough. For whites, America's primary moral mission is to overcome race, to go beyond group consciousness and embrace all citizens as individuals, particularly for teachers, clergy, social workers, politicians, and even many corporate executives. The move beyond race is America's great calling. Not for blacks. For a black to speak or act in ways that are obligatory for whites is to commit racial suicide. It is to court contempt and expulsion, James.
We'll be back, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool Guys will be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show, the Political Cesspool Radio Program. I am James Edwards. Keith Alexander to my right now, doing his customary walk around the studio like a caged tiger. And I don't know if he's just so pumped up by his own commentary tonight, which is very hot. You're on fire tonight, Keith. And I'm hot now. I don't know if it's because it's about 200 degrees in the station tonight, or because we're just blowing it up, or what. But I got to find somebody around here that knows how to turn that air conditioning on. In fact, I might turn the mic over to you for a minute and go find the air conditioning myself. They're dropping the ball out there tonight in the lobby. I gotta go figure something. So I'm gonna turn it over to Keith for a second, let him get started again. I'm gonna see if I can cool it down a little bit. We're overheating. So Keith, back to the fireworks.
Here we are again, James. Let me tell you that it is. It's important when we get into these topics. The subject for this segment is going to be the consolidation movement in Memphis and Shelby County. This is something that comes through Memphis periodically, like Halley's Comet. I think it last came through 20 years ago, but you can always depend on it coming back around. It's a proposal for the Memphis city government to consolidate with the Shelby County government. Of course, Memphis is predominantly black, with whites having been driven out to the suburbs by school integration and by residential integration. Again, all engineered by the liberals of America since the 1950s, particularly 1954 and the Brown decision. But even though it's couched in terms that, you know, we're just seeking efficiency, we're seeking economies of scale, things like this, the actual reason is they cannot bear to lose control over the white people's money. I've always told James that the true, timeless, evergreen goal of black politicians is, how do we get the white people's money without getting voted out by the white people's votes? Now, consolidation is another effort to do that, and it's like the hate crime bill in some way. You know, the hate crime bill that was passed in the Obama administration had been presented 43 previous times, and of course it was defeated 43 times, but that doesn't matter. You know, like the devil, liberals never sleep. They keep coming back and coming back with the same proposals. On the 44th try, they got it passed. And, you know, we're hearing people like Rush Limbaugh and Michael Savage talking about repealing the health care reform bill. But has any of them said anything about repealing the hate crimes law, the law that sets in a new feudal system for America where whites like serfs, if they attack a black person, that's an enhanced penalty. That's assault plus a hate crime, where if a black attacks a white person, it's just assault, a minor crime. So consequently, it's just like feudal Europe, where you have two classes of people. Nobody's talking about repealing that. None of these so-called great conservative thinkers of our time, like Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or Bill O'Reilly or Sarah Palin, has that on their agenda, because they're in with the program. And the program is white people are to be passive, and they're to basically, like T.S. Eliot said, this is the way the world will end, not with a bang but a whimper. They're to be passive through their own dispossession. Well, the consolidation movement in Memphis and Shelby County is, again, an effort by blacks to get the white people's money. And we were talking about racial differences with the white racial versus black racial consciousness reality that is often thought about but never commented upon, particularly in the mainstream media. Likewise, consolidation bears another startling reality, one that the mainstream doesn't want people to realize, and that's that black people have a parasite-host relationship with white people. If they don't live in the midst of white people, and I mean a lot of white people, they can't live a first-world lifestyle. Whenever they really take over and have control of some area, it's an example of that old saying, be careful what you wish for, your dream may come true. That's what they want to do. But when they do it, voila, they have Detroit, or they have East St. Louis, Illinois, or they have Gary, Indiana, or they have Camden, New Jersey, the American city that had the first black mayor, and he momentously said when he was elected, I don't know where America's going, but Camden's going to get there first. Well, Camden is shutting down public services right, left, and sideways right now, so I guess that's the direction America's going in. And Memphis is trying to prevent that. They know it. They don't want to admit it, but they are desperate to lay their hands on white citizens through this consolidation effort. And if they get consolidation, people will just move, as Sam Dixon has said before, one exit further down the expressway, get outside of Shelby County altogether, and then they'll want, voila, metro government, where they can go across state lines and they can go across county lines in order to pursue the ever elusive and ever fleeing white tax base, James.
Keith, again, I mean, you know, folks, tell me what other radio program on the airwaves today where you're going to get the kind of hard-hitting commentary on the most sensitive of issues that we deliver to you each and every Saturday night here on the Political Cesspool. The commentary you just heard from Keith Alexander is what makes this show so special and so unique. You can disagree with us if you'd like. We think we're right about these things. And, of course, not all blacks are included in that. I think that goes without saying. We all know good, upstanding black people that work hard and pay their taxes just like we do. But there's not many, at least, and if there are many, they haven't presented themselves, and certainly they are the exception rather than the rule, and are not in leadership positions, and so these stereotypes exist, but of course they're not just stereotypes, there's a tremendous element of truth there, but nevertheless, having a frank and candid and open discussion and debate about these issues is something that America needs, and it's not getting it anywhere else but here on the Political Cesspool. This is what Eric Holder asked for, a conversation about race. We're trying to give it to him. Hopefully he's tuned in. Going to quickly take a call. We don't have much time before the hour break. I think Julian from New Amsterdam on the line. Julian.
No, from Amsterdam.
Amsterdam, wow. Holland.
Yeah.
Wow. Thanks for tuning in tonight. What can we do for you? Great to have a European listener. Keith, Holland on the line. What can we do for you tonight?
Actually, I'm American, and I'm here. I live here.
Right.
But I was just listening to your show, and I was just wondering, what are you trying to accomplish with your show?
Can you repeat that one time?
What are you trying to accomplish with the show tonight? It's like about race, and I just wonder what you're trying to accomplish with it.
All right, I'll answer the question, or in fact, allow Keith to answer it, since he's been kind of commanding these last two segments. Thanks for the call. Keith, the question was asked, what are we trying to accomplish tonight with the radio program?
What we're trying to accomplish is to have equality for white people throughout the world. You know, we're called white supremacists and white nationalists, but actually all we're asking is that whites have the right to organize themselves and to lobby for their own political rights with the same freedom and the same lack of self-consciousness that blacks, Muslims, Chinese, the gay community, you name it, Hispanics. All of these people are not only allowed but encouraged to try to lobby for their own interests, and there is no question the elites of the world validate the fact that they have legitimate racial interests. Well, you know what? White people do too, not only in America but in Europe, in Australia, everywhere else. We should have the same rights as other people, and we don't have them, and that's, Julian, why we are, that's the reason why we have this show. We want people to wake up and smell the coffee. We want the scales to fall from their eyes, as it says in the Bible, and understand that this equality is the opposite of equality. This equality that is being urged upon white people is something that is never urged upon any other group, and it's being urged upon whites not for beneficent or benevolent purposes. It is for the purpose of harming us and harming our posterity.
Keith Alexander, a fine answer as always. I want to thank Julian for the call and the question all the way over there from Amsterdam. Not New Amsterdam. He is an American, as you mentioned, but living over there in Europe. And listen, it is an international audience that we command each and every weekend here on the Political Cesspool radio program. Just checked my email over the course of the last couple of segments as Keith was pontificating and making the most of his time with me this evening. And had some book orders come in for my new book from right here in Memphis.
James Lawless, take all time
to make money. That's right. That's right. Had an order come in recently from Memphis, from Florida. I just mentioned all the support we've got from Florida and from Norway. So that's a pretty vast selection, Keith. The last three purchases of my book have come from right here in Memphis, from Florida, and from Norway. And we, of course, just had the caller from Holland. So got to take a break, ladies and gentlemen. Big show still forthcoming. Two more hours left tonight to be had here on the Political Cesspool. I'm going to take a break and lead you through them right after this.
Two to go. Stay tuned. Hour number two of the Political Cesspool comes your way right after these messages.
And Harv leaped to his feet and says, "Something's got a hold on me." Yow! The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleeping little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting hallelujah. Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the blooms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room, all the way down to the amen.